InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, August 27th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. 66 shot, 12 fatally. Oh, wait a minute. That was in Chicago. That wasn't in Jacksonville. And that was a couple of weeks ago, August the 6th. The next weekend, we saw nearly 60 shot in Chicago. Four people killed, 54 people shot that weekend. And they said that was up from the same weekend back in 2017, where only 48 people were shot and 5 were killed. And yet, what do you hear about these deaths in Chicago, where they already have the kind of gun control laws that the Democrats' media, the Democrat politicians have taken to the airwaves demanding in the wake of Jacksonville? You hear nothing. Nothing. But everybody is going to be talking about Jacksonville. That's the headlines everywhere. That and John McCain. And so we're going to talk about both of those issues today. And I think we've made the title of today's broadcast in a blow to ISIS and the deep state, John McCain dies. Folks, we're going to take a look. We're going to take an honest look at the legacy of John McCain. This isn't to beat a dead horse, so to speak. Certainly, I have condolences for his family. And I think that that is all that he is due. That is what President Trump gave him. That is something that a lot of people have been criticizing President Trump merely for giving condolences to the family. Yes, always when somebody dies, it is a tragedy to the family. But folks, what John McCain did to this country as senator is a tragedy. What he did with the tens of thousands, conservatively, that died as a result of the policies and the wars that he provoked, that is a tragedy of unbelievable magnitude. And so we're going to look at the legacy of John McCain. We're going to take a look at his political legacy because, of course, a lot of people are out there saying, well, I don't agree with John McCain, but I'm not going to criticize him. We're just going to eulogize him, right? Just going to say good things about him because he's now deceased. But you have to understand the people who are eulogizing him the most, the phony resistance. You've got candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calling him a hero. You have Beto O'Rourke calling him a hero. You have Chuckie Schumer wanting to rename the Senate building after him. Why are they doing this? It's because he was the leader of the deep state opposition to President Trump, not just the leader of one war after the other. There is no one who has been more of a warmonger, no one who has sowed more chaos and death and sorrow in this world as a political American political leader than John McCain. And I'm going to call him out on this today because, quite frankly, I am disgusted by all the sycophants out there eulogizing him for political reasons. And we need to talk about the consequences of people's lives. Yes, you want to talk about politics? Certainly, I don't agree with him. I mean, he was a Ted Kennedy, if you will, on politics. The difference is that John McCain was a rhino. He would lie to the people in order to get elected. He would say, well, I'm going to get rid of Obamacare. I'm going to protect the borders. I'm going to defund Planned Parenthood. I'm going to stop climate change. And then when he would get in, he would do exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. This is a guy who not only was part of the Gang of Eight, but he was also a friend to neo-Nazis, a friend to ISIS terrorists. And as I said, he set the Middle East on fire. And we are reaping the whirlwind, the blowback, and the refugees. Not to mention the people who have been killed. Bomb, 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 Iran. That should be put on his tombstone. He'll be proud of that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this August 27th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at the legacy of John McCain. I talked about this at the top of the hour, but before we do, I want to get into what happened in the aftermath, what is happening in the aftermath of the Jacksonville shooting. We have USA Today and every news outlet. Here are the victims of the Jacksonville mass shooting at the Madden tournament. And of course, it is a tragedy. We had several people die, many others wounded. But there is no information whatsoever, no coverage at all this weekend, certainly not this weekend, of all the people being killed in Chicago. More than this number are killed every weekend in Chicago, where they have the kind of gun laws that are now being advocated nonstop at CNN and MSNBC, Washington Post, New York Times. They already have those kind of gun laws, far more restrictive than what they're even proposing in Florida. And we see 60 people on average every weekend shot, more than this number killed in Chicago. Let's first go to the report of what actually happened in Jacksonville. Here's a quick summary of what happened yesterday.
Got a lot of good games going on.
It's a
today.
Lot. It's going to be hard to get them on stream. It's not a lot.
It's not a tough out today. Excuse me, not an easy out. Oh.
All right, so that's some audio from a live video feed. It was taken down. It was part of a gaming tournament. They were doing a football game, John Madden football game, and in the middle of that, the shooting broke out, as you heard that. Yes, very visceral. There's no live video footage of the 66 people who were shot, 12 of them fatally in Chicago the first week of August. No video footage of that, no discussion of that. It is covered by local news, but mainstream media doesn't talk about that anymore. Quite frankly, it isn't news because it happens every single weekend. August the 6th, just a couple of weeks ago, Chicago police said a total of 66 people were shot from 6 p.m. on Friday to midnight on Sunday. 12 of those victims have died. August the 20th, just last week, 4 people were killed, nearly 60 shot. Last weekend, we don't have the totals yet for Chicago, where they have gun control, very strict gun control laws. They said 4 people were killed, 54 people shot last weekend in Chicago, up from the same weekend in 2017 that saw 48 people shot and 5 killed. And yet, all you see is nonstop coverage of what happened in Jacksonville as they use this for political advantage. And as many people have pointed out, this Jacksonville Mall, where they had the gaming tournament where the people were shot, has something else in Chicago, in common with Chicago. It's essentially a gun-free zone. In other words, you're not allowed to have guns to protect yourself. Highly restricted, prohibited there. And so you've got gamers are pleading for more security after this. Please protect us. You're not going to allow us to protect ourselves. Will you please protect us? No, they're not going to protect you. And let's play a little bit of a CNN contributor. This is General Barry McCaffrey. He is a veteran of the Iraq War. And I want you to hear some of the amazing things that he had to say in terms of pushing for more gun control legislation. Here is CNN.
David, I think we're getting inured to this, getting accustomed to it. We're having mass shootings with semi-automatic weapons or automatic weapons on a regular basis. The last day in combat as an infantry company commander in Vietnam, I got shot by a machine gun. We probably had the same level of casualties, around 20 wounded and 3 or 4 killed in action. But that's in combat. We were opposing North Vietnamese Army regulars. What we're seeing now is automatic and semi-automatic weapons being used against defenseless populations, primarily in large groups where they, whether it's schools or public entertainment, where they're helpless. It's hard to know how to get out of this. Most of the measures we've taken to confront this issue are on the margin. We're not going to make any progress on this until there's actually coordination between mental health authorities and law enforcement, which is unlikely to happen, until we restrict in some way through registration or diminish sales the availability of weapons, particularly to young men. Gang-related primarily. So it's a huge disgraceful situation for the country.
You talk about being inured. I guess you could say being complacent as well. How much pessimism does that engender in you? In other words, is this something that you think is now a current state of affairs, something that we're going to deal with? Do you see any signs here that complacency is going to change, General?
No, I don't.
Let's hold that right there. Again, you heard him say these are automatic weapons and so forth. There weren't any automatic weapons used there. But, of course, we have to blame males. We got to do something about males. Maybe we can neuter them more. Maybe we can turn them into females. I don't know. We're working on it. Believe me, they're working on it very hard. But I find it kind of ironic that Barry McCaffrey, who, by the way, was part of Obama's cabinet. He's now at CNN. He's part of Obama's cabinet fighting the drug war. He was director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Maybe the first policy he ought to take a look at is the drug war itself. See if it fits with the Constitution. See if it wasn't a regurgitation of something that was created by the United Nations, because it was. Please explain to me how the National Drug Control Policy jives with the 10th Amendment and the 18th Amendment, which testify to the fact that the 10th Amendment prohibits the prohibition of anything without a specific amendment to the Constitution giving them that power. The 18th Amendment gave them the power to prohibit alcohol. But beyond that, I find it kind of interesting that Barry McCaffrey was called out by Seymour Hersh with allegations that a lot of interviews that he did with people as part of the Iraq War, which we're going to be getting to in just a few minutes here with John McKay. As part of the Iraq War, he did a brilliant strategic move. They called it the left hook. But he was accused of having pushed that advantage in terms of a massive slaughter against people who basically had thrown down their arms and were trying to escape. As they pointed out, Seymour Hersh wrote that McCaffrey, whose pre-1991 record he praised extensively, may, according to an unnamed source, have commanded his troops to kill retreating Iraq soldiers after the ceasefire had been declared, then failed to properly investigate reports of killings of unarmed persons and alleged massacres of hundreds of Iraqi POWs. This is a guy who is now lecturing us on why the government should have a monopoly on the use of force, why we should not have weapons, and lying about the fact that automatic weapons were used in this Jacksonville shooting. Yeah, he said we have become somewhat accustomed to these shootings, so much so they don't report the mass murders every weekend and gun control Chicago. One colonel told Seymour Hersh that it made no sense for a defeated army to invite its own death. It came across as shooting fish in a barrel. Everyone was incredulous. So that's Barry McCaffrey, the guy who worked for Obama, who is now working for gun control. I think it's very interesting when we talk about these mass shooters. This is blockbuster information, folks. Feds are scrambling as the Vegas shooter's girlfriend reportedly listed the FBI as a place of employment. Whoa, it just gets even crazier, doesn't it, with the biggest mass shooting we ever had. It was a lone shooter, of course, right? All of these are lone shooters. And it is interesting that we keep having these lone shooter events in Florida, where the Republican Party seems to be very malleable on the issue of gun control. A bombshell revelation in regard to the massacre that took place last October in Las Vegas has surfaced this week, suggesting that Stephen Paddock's girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, could have been an FBI asset. According to a credit application, she listed the FBI as her employer, and the FBI had some interesting comments we'll give you when we come back. Stay with us.
My eyes have seen the years and the slow.
Yeah, we seen many years of drug prohibition, haven't we? And yet, what we see happening every weekend in Chicago is a result of the violence that harkens back to Al Capone, doesn't it? We saw the same thing when we had alcohol prohibition. Are Budweiser and Miller shooting each other in the streets to sell beer in Chicago now? No, they're not. No, they're not doing that now. And so you have Dick Durbin immediately politicizing this Jacksonville shooting, attacking the NRA, as the Daily Caller points out. This is a guy, the senator from Illinois, where you have 60-plus people a weekend shot there. Typically, the same number or more die. Three people died in this shooting yesterday. Typically, over a weekend, typical weekend in Chicago, you have 4 to 5 people die. That's been the death toll over the last several weeks here in August, and about 60 people shot. But he has the audacity, without knowing how the shooter got his gun, without knowing who this guy is, or what his possible motives would be, he has the audacity to tweet out, "When will Congress have the courage to stand up to the NRA and pass meaningful reforms?" Meaningful reforms. When are you going to pass some meaningful reforms? Yeah, you've passed a lot of laws in Illinois, haven't you? They've been pretty meaningful. They mean that a lot of law-abiding citizens are prohibited or nearly prohibited from protecting themselves. They make it so difficult to get a gun that it is, for all practical purposes, impossible to do so. So you've made some meaningful reforms to the Second Amendment. You've made some meaningful reforms to people's inherent right to protect innocent life, theirs and other people's. You've made that nearly impossible in Chicago. And we can see the results. You've also failed to do any meaningful reform of the UN drug laws that are at the heart of this violence between these different gangs. And yet you say that more laws and shutting down the NRA will help prevent these shootings in America. That's Senator Dick Durbin. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely amazing to see him, to see yet another general, as we've seen McChrystal and others, get on and try to argue that only the military should have weapons. That is the most dangerous thing that could ever happen here in the United States. That only the military, that only the government would have weapons. You see McChrystal out there talking about how fast the bullets fly, talking about the muzzle velocity, not even talking about the rapid rate of fire. He's talking about the muzzle velocity and saying that that is a reason that we should not be allowed to have guns to defend ourselves. Absolutely amazing. But equally amazing, as we look at these shootings, let's understand that we ought to take a little bit of time and actually do investigations about these things. As I said, Dick Durbin is out there immediately not knowing how this guy got his gun, not knowing anything about this guy, his motivations, his mental health. And he said, "Oh, we got to have some more laws. Let's add some more laws here." Well, here we are coming up to the 1 year anniversary. You know, we're only about a month or two away from the 1 year anniversary of the Las Vegas shooting. And we're still getting some bombshell information out of that. Not only have they changed the narrative over and over again, one absurd narrative and lie after the other, but now we have Marilou Danley, girlfriend of Stephen Paddock, the guy who has been identified as the lone shooter in that event, listing the FBI as her employer. And as Freethought Project points out, this is the same Marilou Danley whose fingerprints were found on the ammunition that was used to murder 58 people on the 1st of October. This is the same Marilou Danley who admitted to law enforcement that she helped Paddock load the magazines that Paddock would use that fateful night. This is the same Danley who reportedly was visiting family in the Philippines at the time and set her Facebook account to private at 12:38 a.m. and then deleted it entirely at 2:46 a.m., nearly 1 hour before his name was publicly released as the suspect in the shooting. Nothing to see here, right? That's not suspicious at all, is it? That her fingerprints would be all over the ammunition. She'd admit she loaded it. Then she goes to the Philippines, and then she deletes her Facebook account an hour before the name is put out there publicly. Yeah, yeah. According to publicly available intelligence obtained from a Consumer Credit Reporting Bureau, Marilou Danley, girlfriend of Stephen Paddock, claimed she previously worked at the FBI. While anyone can certainly claim anyone else as an employer, according to True Pundit, they contacted the FBI. And the FBI said their bosses are concerned over this revelation. When contacted Friday, one FBI source said the Bureau, quote, might have made payments to Danley, but it is above my level. In FBI speak, Danley could have been a paid asset. The source also said that the bosses are concerned. And they went on to say, and I'm sure with a touch of sarcasm, perhaps FBI Director Christopher Wray could shed light on the matter. You think he's going to investigate this? No. Or Danley, if you can find her. You know, she's not in town anymore. She's an Australian. She's not even a U.S. citizen. So it just gets stranger as we look at this. But let's immediately jump to the conclusion that more gun control laws could stop something like this shooting, which, although it took three lives in Jacksonville, is very, very small compared to what happens every weekend in Chicago, and you don't see CNN bemoaning the gun control laws in Chicago. They've already got the most stringent anywhere. They do everything already there that everybody is proposing. And then another example here. We have the terrorist attack manual found at New Mexico Jihad compound. This is the guy that was had kidnapped his toddler, three-year-old toddler. They found the remains of the toddler there. Others that were there said he'd basically been beaten, starved to death. There were reports that they were training the other kids to conduct a terror attack on schools and so forth. Now they have found a handwritten document titled Phases of a Terrorist Attack, found at that New Mexico encampment. Prosecutors have now asked this judge who turned this guy loose, asked the judge, Sarah Bacchus, to reconsider an order granting bond to the five adults that were arrested at the compound, citing, quote, not only the death of the three-year-old Abdul, but also plans by the defendants to attack law enforcement and specific targets, such as teachers, schools, banks, and other, quote, unquote, corrupt institutions. The defense is saying that Bacchus needs to just dismiss the charges altogether. No problem. Give him a free pass. I'm sure if John McCain were alive, he would give him a character reference, as he did ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria. One of the reasons that you see so much being made about John McCain is because he was so tied to the Never Trump deep state, that he opposed President Trump on so many different issues. And also because they don't want you to take a look at the fact that the U.S. and Mexico may be today announcing a new deal on NAFTA. That's right. All the tough talk that President Trump did with Mexico, and it looks like now they may be announcing a new deal, a new trade deal. I would hope that it would mean that they get rid of NAFTA. NAFTA is a thing that needs to go. We don't need to rearrange the deck chairs.
Sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. With the death of John McCain, questions are now who will replace him? The Arizona governor must, by law in Arizona, replace the candidate with a senator from the same party. But of course, that would happen anyway because the governor is a Republican. His name is Ducey. And as they point out in the Hill, he's a bit nervous about his own reelection bid this November. He's very aware that Arizona has a large conservative constituency there. And he needs those voters to get reelected. And he would also benefit from a close relationship with Trump. He's also close to Vice President Pence. So it's not clear yet as to who he will nominate. But this is... it's probably going to be somebody who is a conservative. Certainly couldn't be any further out, however, than Jeff Flake, who still remains as a senator. He's going to serve out his term. And, of course, John McCain served out his term long after he was too sick to even go to Washington. He'd been a senator for 32 years. Could not give this up, even for the good of the country. It was all about his political career, wasn't it? He should have turned this over long ago, as sick as he was, to somebody else. Should have resigned, let somebody else take care of the business of the country. If, as he had repeatedly said, we couldn't let the government shut down. We needed to have somebody there to move things forward. I think perhaps he was concerned that this governor would put somebody in the office that would be conservative. Because we already have a replacement in the wings for McCain as leader of the opposition to President Trump and the conservative agenda, and that is Mitt Romney. You recall last week, Mitt Romney came out attacking Trump and gloating over the fact that Paul Manafort had been convicted, that Michael Cohen had been convicted. He said the events of the last 24 hours confirmed that conduct by highly placed individuals is both dishonorable and illegal. He tweeted that out last Wednesday. Despite the fact that what happened to Paul Manafort, one way or the other, had absolutely nothing to do with President Trump. Romney is going to take the place of McCain in the Senate. He will be the leader of the opposition. Remember, he was already selected by the establishment as Obamacare Plan B. That's right. You want your Obamacare? You can get your Obamacare because we're going to give you a Republican candidate who's going to put that in even if Barack Obama doesn't win. It was a given that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were going to put through Obamacare if, for some reason, Obama didn't get reelected. Romney had already done that, working with Ted Kennedy. And, of course, Romney has also worked with Ted Kennedy just like John McCain worked with Ted Kennedy on issues like immigration. See, John McCain was the ultimate rhino. Rhino extraordinaire. John McCain was somebody who betrayed the GOP when it came to Obamacare. He betrayed the GOP when it came to immigration. He even flip-flopped on climate change. He had said that was the most critical issue of our future. That was when he was running for president, between 2000 and 2009. He found an enthusiasm for climate change. It was the great motivating issue of our time, he said, as a candidate. Then after he lost in 2008, he began to mock Obama because Obama said, this is the greatest issue of our time. Basically what John McCain had been saying for the previous 9 years as he wanted to become president. And then he mocked him. He said, no, the greatest issue is what's going on in Syria. That's what we got to do in Syria. And then when President Trump got elected and started pushing back against climate change, John McCain comes back out again and on his deathbed says it's, again, now the most critical issue of our future. He did the same thing with Planned Parenthood. He was saying that he was going to kill it. He campaigned for that, just like he campaigned to do something about the border. He campaigned against Obamacare and so forth. And he said that he was going to get rid of funding for Planned Parenthood. But then when push came to shove, it was the most important thing. Was not Planned Parenthood. Most important thing was not babies being killed and then chopped up into pieces and sold for profit. No, the most important thing was to keep the government going. But this is a guy who, even though for nearly a year he hasn't been able to go to the Senate, refused to relinquish his seat for the good of the country. Remember, it was about a year ago. It was back the end of July, a year and a month ago. They came so close to getting rid of the Obamacare mandate. And it was John McCain with his thumbs down, the arrogance, the power that he enjoyed so much. As CNN reported and gloated about it at the time, July 29th, 2017, McCain with a simple yet dramatic thumbs down on the Senate floor in the wee hours of Friday morning signaled to the Senate, his colleagues and the rest of the United States that he was not prepared to go along with the latest Republican plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. After the vote, the 80-year-old senator was seen laughing with Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, the two other Republicans who voted against the health bill. As they pointed out, it took him only 10 seconds to cast his no vote. Trump tweeted out, the Republicans, quote, let the American people down. not just Republicans, but John McCain specifically. He said nobody talked to him. Nobody needed to. Then he walked in, thumbs down. It's all right, because we've essentially gutted it anyway, said President Trump at the time. And as we see the response to people, President Trump offered condolences to the family, but he refused to put out a crafted press release talking about what a hero and what a great politician this rhino and this mass murderer John McCain was. As he tweeted out, he started talking about Obama's accomplishments as one of the things he did. Said mainstream media tries to rewrite history to credit Obama for Trump accomplishments. He's quoting, actually, a Washington Times article in this tweet. Since President Trump took office, the economy is booming. The stronger the economy gets, the more desperate his critics are. Obama had the weakest recovery since the Great Depression. So President Trump tweeted that out. That triggered a lot of people. The Daily Mail reports that and has a tweet from nobody in particular. They just liked what this person had to say, so they put it there. Why are you tweeting about Obama rather than saying anything even remotely useful or presidential about the terrible mass shooting that took place hours ago? Oh, that's right, because it doesn't help your agenda anyway. You are scum. Yeah, this is what this person put in, and that's what they chose to put up. But, of course, the question would be, why anonymous person here, why are you not talking about the number of people that are shot in Chicago every week that's greater than the number of people in Jacksonville? Would that be because you are scum? Because you're trying to use their deaths to get a gun control agenda passed that will just make it harder for law-abiding people to defend their lives and lives of innocent people? And then there's the Planned Parenthood issue. Remember when we had the budget deals back in 2013, then again in 2015? John McCain was very angry when in 2013 there was a 16-day shutdown of the federal government. And then he told NPR that he would support holding the 2016 federal spending bill hostage over Planned Parenthood. He said, shouldn't we, back in 2013, he said, shouldn't we be ashamed, shouldn't we be embarrassed that we didn't pass a bill in 2013? But then a few years later, he says, we're not going to go through a shutdown again. We're going to get this thing through. But at that time, when they were trying to push that bill through, the pictures and the video came out showing what Planned Parenthood was doing. The expose by the Center for Medical Progress showing these people haggling over the body parts of unborn children. And at that point, John McCain had to do something to appease his conservative base. So he said the appalling footage that's been released over the last several weeks has made it abundantly clear taxpayers should not be forced to pay for such disturbing activity. But then he did. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to take a look at some of the hero actions of John McCain in just a minute, and why you have everybody on the left as well as all the globalists. We've got Justin Trudeau, we've got Emmanuel Macron, we got Angela Merkel. All of them are in love with this guy. No love lost with President Trump, however. I don't know if this is true because it's coming from the Washington Post, but it does ring true. Because we know that there's been no love lost between President Trump and John McCain. John McCain, quite frankly, pursued his own foreign policy in terms of trying to continue to arm and train ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria. There was a statement that had already been drawn up, according to the Washington Post. This is typically done, as I know that somebody is gravely ill, as John McCain was, talking about his military service, his Senate service, calling him a hero. President Trump said, I'll tweet something instead. And what he did was he tweeted condolences to the family. My deepest sympathies and respect go out to the family of Senator John McCain. Our hearts and prayers are with you. I think that was appropriate. And quite frankly, I agree with President Trump. I think that was all that should have been said. because we're going to talk a little bit about the background here of John McCain, his political accomplishments. Before we do, I just want to remind you of some of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com that support this program and everything that we do here at InfoWars. As you realize, we have become the cause celeb for the Silicon Valley censorship. And of course, the left applauds that just as they do John McCain, the warmonger, right? As I tweeted out when all this stuff happened, I said, you remember when the left used to be anti-war? Do you remember when they used to be pro-free speech? You remember when they used to worry about the influence of big corporations? You remember when they used to worry about Citizens United and undue influence on elections by big corporations? None of that matters anymore because it's all about the politics. And that's exactly what is happening now with John McCain. But if you'd like to support us, we've got a couple of new products I can tell you about. At InfoWarsStore.com, we have the ultimate bone broth in terms of a reformulation. Better ingredients, new supplier. You can get it 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have a new product called Ultimate Female Force. Perfect companion or alternative to Super Female Vitality. Ultimate Female Force is now available at InfoWarsStore.com at an introductory price of 50% off. And finally, for our listeners here, Real News with David Knight, you can get 20% off of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. Use the code REALNEWS at checkout to get 20% off of either the original or the immune support. And those are both non-GMO, 100% Arabica bean. You can get 20% off original or immune support. Use the code REALNEWS at checkout to save 20% on Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. All right, so what did John McCain accomplished that everybody is so excited about? Let's go back and review some of the highlights of John McCain's career. Well, there was a Keating 5 scandal back in 1989. That was when he was involved in influence peddling and corruption on behalf of a financier, Charles Keating, trying to get deals for him with federal banking regulators. Of course, he escaped that, as we typically see happens with the people in Washington that are connected to the military-industrial establishment and the deep state. Then, of course, John McCain and Ted Kennedy took on immigration. Yeah, just like McCain's soon-to-be successor, Mitt Romney, who also worked with Ted Kennedy. You know, Mitt Romney and Ted Kennedy worked together to put through RomneyCare, which was identical to Obamacare. That's why the establishment picked Mitt Romney to run against Obama as a hedge. You get, like I said before, he's Plan B for Obamacare. But of course, McCain and Kennedy were pushing for amnesty for illegal aliens way back when. But of course, it was going to be partnered with better border security. We've heard that before, haven't we? Have you heard that before? We heard that going all the way back to 1986, that repeating lie. We're just going to give amnesty to all the people that are already here illegally, and then we're going to do something about border security. That was the plan. People didn't go for that. So then in 2013, he was part of the Gang of Eight. Eight senators that wanted to give amnesty, including Marco Rubio and Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham. But John McCain was one of the leaders of the Gang of Eight that wanted to undermine this country and with the immigration laws. Then he goes to Syria in 2013. He really got busy after just the last 5 years or so. He got very, very busy. Did more in the last 5 years to undermine this country than he had for the early part of his Senate career. The mask really came off after he lost his run for the presidency. So he goes to Syria in 2013. He meets with rebels. Yeah, rebels. Yeah, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, helping to arm them, equip them, train them, get his picture taken with them. And then he goes to the Ukraine in 2013, working with Soros and the neo-Nazis there, literal Nazis in the Ukraine, to help sow chaos, to overthrow governments, leaving war and death in his wake everywhere he goes. Then in 2017, after President Trump was elected, he goes back to Syria to pursue his own independent foreign policy. Before that, he'd been shopping around the dossier. He had gone to London, and he was the one who brought back that dossier that was funded by Hillary Clinton and the DNC, working with British intelligence and the CIA to try to undermine Trump, to try to overthrow the election. That was John McCain as well. And then right after that, he goes back to Syria. And then we had John McCain on health care. The last really big thing that he did, and we talked about that earlier, his thumbs down. Shutting down any effort by Republicans to try to follow through on their long-term promise to Republican voters. How many times had he and other Republicans promised us that they were going to get rid of the unconstitutional Obamacare? Wouldn't do it for the Constitution, wouldn't do it for the voters. But CNN's Jake Tapper nails it. This is why there is so much reverence for John McCain. Let's play the clip from Jake Tapper.
For a younger generation of conservatives, what does McCain mean? And I can't help but think that like part of the reason why there's such reverence for him today is because of who's in the White House right now, because they're polar opposites.
A young generation of conservatives? What kind of conservative is this in the younger generation? NPR is out there saying he is one of a kind. John McCain's indelible place in American politics. You got George Soros tweeting for him. Remembering John McCain, a brave warrior for human rights. Yeah, he worked with me to overthrow governments in Ukraine and Syria and other places. He worked with George Soros. I said he stood up against repression and torture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did speak out on torture. I'll give him that. But he was responsible for the death of so many people. And of course, he took the product of intelligence that was created by torture, that Gina Haspel got with torture, and elevated that to push for a war, the second Iraq war. So let's not forget that he wasn't above using the product of torture to start another war, because that was what John McCain was all about. But George Soros loved him, thought he was a brave warrior. Because, you know, he helped Soros with the globalist agenda. He helped to overthrow governments in the Ukraine and Syria to create an immigration chaos that could then be used to invade and flood Western countries throughout Europe and the West. One person replied to George Soros' tweet, said, well, then why would Vietnam veterans need to form a group against John McCain if he was truly the hero that he made himself out to be? Good question. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And as we look at the rest of the people here, he's going to be laying in state in Washington, D.C. We're going to have Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama will be speaking at the memorial. President Trump will not be there. He was requested not to be there by John McCain. Senator Jeff Flake is singing his praises along with Joe Biden, Emmanuel Macron, Angela Merkel, as I pointed out before, and Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer wants to rename the Senate building after John McCain. He says, most of all, says Chuck Schumer, most of all, John McCain was a truth teller. Are you kidding me? Just from what we know in Syria. But of course, this is coming from Chuck Schumer, who wouldn't know the truth if it bit him on the ankle. This is absolutely amazing. And of course, what I think the most amazing thing and very telling thing is that if you take a look at the candidates, the new left, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Beto O'Rourke, supported by George Soros, they are also holding moments of silence and reverence for John McCain. O'Rourke and Ocasio-Cortez. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
I'm going to get back to the legacy of John McCain in just a moment. This is the top of the hour, and we have a lot of our radio stations are carrying news at the top of the hour. And I wanted to talk a little bit at this point about NAFTA, because today we're expected to have some news about NAFTA. And two things are involved here. Number one, equalizing trade tariffs and doing something to help American jobs and the American economy. So that's one aspect of this. The U.S. has proposed tightening regional content requirements for car production and having a certain percentage of car manufacturing by higher paid workers. So that's one aspect of it. And certainly we can applaud anything that's going to help the American economy, anything that's going to give more jobs and higher wages to Americans. But the key issue about NAFTA is the sovereignty issue. And that is one aspect of what is being talked about as well. It's being reported by the Wall Street Journal yesterday. They said the latest breakthrough is that perhaps a key sticking point in the NAFTA negotiations between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada is President Trump's desire to remove a provision known as Investor State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. And what this does is it allows companies to bring claims to an international tribunal when they believe their overseas investments were unfairly treated by an action from a government. They say this is on the verge of resolution. We don't know which way this is going to go. Hopefully it's going to go the way that it should go, which is to get rid of this investor state dispute settlement mechanism. This is the key issue that makes this a dangerous thing, because it destroys our sovereignty. And we've had many times that corporations have won billions of dollars in compensation from governments when they try to manage trade. First of all, it gets complicated when you got three countries involved. It ought to be not multilateral, but bilateral. President Trump has said that repeatedly. Even when you just have three countries involved, it's a very complex process. Forget about what's going on with Europe. That is many, many countries that are involved in that. Of course, you just deal with Brussels, and what everybody else wants doesn't matter. But when we look at what is going on with this, you understand that this is a board that can stand above national sovereignty and can make decisions without being elected, without being accountable to the people. And that is the greatest problem with all of these trade agreements or these trade partnerships, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TTIP, the one that was going to be the Transatlantic Partnership. They were all going to create boards that were separate and apart from the governments. They would determine what the trade policy was going to be. They were going to determine which countries would be allowed to have which industries. For example, as the European Union does, telling British fishermen that they cannot fish in waters that they have been engaged in for over 1,000 years. Now, we're going to manage that for you. We're going to tell you when and where and how much you can fish, if you can fish, or we're going to let other countries fish in those waters. And so that's one aspect of it. When there is a disagreement, the corporations are on equal footing with the government, and they can go to an arbitration process and shut this down. This is what makes these trade agreements, these trade partnerships, so dangerous. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. Hopefully, we're going to see both of those things improve. It is an opportunity, and I almost hate to see a resolution to this, because this is such a big economic issue. President Trump used automobile trade particularly to bring this to an issue. I was hoping that Canada and Mexico would just walk away. But they're going to try to come up with some agreement to preserve the structure of NAFTA, because it is the structure and not necessarily the terrorists themselves that present the greatest threat to America and to American sovereignty. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. To John McCain, I want to talk about the other story that is now front and center of all the headlines, and of course that is the shooting that happened at the gaming tournament in Jacksonville, Florida. You know, it was about a week ago that Israel eased their gun control laws. Why'd they do it? Because they were having a lot of lone wolf terror attacks. They pointed out that they have lone wolf terror attacks. Some of them involved guns. Some of them involved knives. Some of them involved cars mowing down pedestrians, We've seen all this in London, haven't we? And elsewhere throughout Europe. And so what Israel's response was to this was to change its gun regulations to enable hundreds of thousands of more civilians to apply for licenses. Now, the response to this was some people said this is going to help increase security. Other people said, no, it's going to stoke violence. And yet, when you look at what is happening here, what people turn a blind eye to now is the violence that happens every weekend in Chicago. About 60 people shot, about 4 people killed every weekend in Chicago, where they make it very, very difficult, if not impossible, to carry a gun for defense. And so what they're saying is with these, that's the same argument that some people are making in Israel. They're saying, well, more people are having guns, is it going to cause more violence? No, just the opposite. We've had this point proven with study after study in the United States. The places where you have the highest percentage of gun ownership are the places where you have the least number of people shot. Because once somebody starts something, you can't prevent somebody from starting something. You can't do that in Chicago, obviously, right? But once something starts, you have people there on hand to help with that. And so they're pointing out that up to 600,000 Israelis could apply for gun licenses. And that would be a dramatic increase on the current 140,000 civilians who carry gun permits in Israel. One source said that, well, we think it's only going to be 35,000. Think about that. Only 35,000 people armed to defend innocent life from terrorists involved with knife attacks or gun attacks or car attacks. Isn't that worth doing? I mean, certainly that is worth doing. It may be as much as 600,000. Who knows? Anywhere from, even on the low side, 35,000 would make a huge difference. But of course, we've already got people who don't know anything about the shooting saying that we have to have new gun laws, especially Dick Durbin from Illinois, home of the Chicago gangland shootings. Now let's take a look at John McCain's foreign policy record here. Because we talked about his domestic policy record, talked about how he betrayed voters in terms of immigration, in terms of Obamacare, in terms of even Planned Parenthood. He talked about how shameful it was to see these videos that were exposed by the Center for Medical Progress showing the trafficking in human flesh being done by Planned Parenthood. He said, I'm not going to support that. And then when push came to shove, the most important thing for John McCain was to get a budget passed, he said. And he had said back in 2013, this is absolutely shameful, not talking about Planned Parenthood, but talking about the fact that the government shut down. He found that to be far more shameful than what we saw happen with Planned Parenthood. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about the man, quite frankly. Everything about him was focused on the deep state and on politics. And he had absolutely no principles about protecting liberty or life. And you can see that when you take a look at the foreign policies that he supported. As Ben Norton pointed out, here's a headline from Ben Norton. John McCain was an extreme right-wing, lifelong warmonger. Here are some of his greatest and bloodiest hits. Now, this guy who is a liberal calls out all these liberals like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Beto O'Rourke. By the way, Beto O'Rourke. Let's talk about Beto O'Rourke. Beto O'Rourke is really, you know, everybody's talking about Ocasio-Cortez, but it really is Beto O'Rourke that we should be looking at. This guy has raised an incredible amount of money. George Soros is supporting his campaign. Hollywood is supporting his campaign. And for good reason. He has set a precedent. He is the first trans Hispanic. This is a guy who is an Irishman. His real name is Robert O'Rourke. His parents are Irish. As I pointed out last week, he was arrested for both drunk driving on one occasion and for burglary on another occasion. But, you know, if you have a daddy who is connected in the Democrat Party to high-ranking officials and is a judge, those types of things are just dismissed as minor indiscretions, aren't they? And so this guy, whose daddy was a high-ranking official. Of course, he's living out in West Texas in El Paso. Large Hispanic population out there. So he wants to get elected to office. He has to identify as a Hispanic. And so he comes up with this nickname, Beto, which is a nickname that in Spanish you would give to somebody that is named Roberto. Roberto is not his name. His name is Robert. Robert O'Rourke. And yet you won't see even O'Rourke on the signs around here. You'll see Beto, 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 Beto. It's absolutely amazing. This guy is running under an assumed name. This guy, Beto O'Rourke, is the Rachel DeLisle of 2018. Remember her? The white woman who identified as a black woman. She actually got herself and put in charge of an NAACP chapter. She was passing for being black. She is totally white. Rachel DeLisle. And she also had an alias. She called herself, Rachel DeLisle called herself Nkechi Amare Diallo. Just as phony as Beto O'Rourke. Yeah, this guy, an Irishman who identifies as an Hispanic. And he learned Spanish, so that gives him his bona fides, right? But he is playing identity politics here. And he isn't even Hispanic. But he supports John McCain. And so this guy, Ben Norton, who is a liberal, real liberal, he said, while leading figures in the liberal resistance, and he puts the little trademark next to it. And quite frankly, that is a trademark that we should sue Hillary Clinton for, because it was Alex Jones for years saying, you are the resistance. She stole that from us. Anyway, that trademark is not valid, but it's a nice little comedic touch there he puts there. While leading figures in the liberal resistance are whitewashing him because of his criticism of Donald Trump, McCain was, in fact, an unrepentant, lifelong warmonger who fueled catastrophic criminal U.S. wars that killed millions of civilians. And this guy, Ben Norton, doesn't like President Trump. You can see there when he talks about President Trump, he calls him a vile, vomit-inducing billionaire-in-chief. So he hates President Trump. But he hates John McCain even more so. And that's why when you look at this and you look at the fawning by Beto O'Rourke, by Chuck Schumer and others, you understand that all of their praise of John McCain is simply to suck up to the military-industrial complex and to attack President Trump. And so he puts in here in his blog here, he's got a map from 2013. He says this doesn't even include U.S. wars in East and Southeast Asia, Korea, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, in which McCain, of course, staunchly supported those. Also ignores countries in Latin America, where he also backed U.S. military intervention. John McCain never saw a war or military intervention that was going on anywhere or could possibly be started somewhere that he didn't want to be a part of. I mean, if there was a war going on somewhere, we needed to be involved in it. That's why John McCain really is the face of the reprehensible, ugly American foreign policy of the last half of the 20th century going on into the 21st century. Every war we have to be involved in. And if there's some area that is unfortunately at peace, we can go in there, overthrow that government, create a civil war, arm both sides of it for the military-industrial complex. That is the legacy of John McCain. And it is despicable. President Trump was right to offer his condolences to the family, but not to honor this man's legacy. We'll be right back. John McCain. We're going to talk about some of the greatest hits of John McCain. Remember that time back in 2015, there was a protest of Henry Kissinger in the Senate? And you had these people screaming at Henry Kissinger, and you had John McCain called their demonstration despicable and shouted it out, get out of here, you low-life scum. And the most amazing thing about that was he wasn't talking to Henry Kissinger. He was talking to the protesters. I could understand it if he was telling Henry Kissinger to get out, because Kissinger is a low-life scum, a war criminal. And quite frankly, John McCain has a long list of war crimes to his name as well. One of the things that he was very proud of was being a lifelong racist, as Ben Norton's pointing out. He declared, "I hate the gooks. I will hate them as long as I live." And of course, he also worked with Paul Ryan to prop up the Soros policy to put Ukrainian Nazis in charge. And don't worry, as Ben Norton points out, we had Democrat Senator Chris Murphy also join them. Says, there you go. There's American bipartisanship at work. But it's there everywhere you see these people who are supported by George Soros. As I point out, Ocasio-Cortez and Beto O'Rourke calling him an American hero. How do you like that, Democrats? You think that's really, really true? You like those wars now, don't you? Anybody that opposes President Trump, they like, no matter what the person does. They will support control by the largest corporations, censorship by the largest corporations, war everywhere, anything if it is opposed to President Trump. In 2013, McCain went to the Ukraine, stood on stage with yet another neo-Nazi leader. He was also a staunch supporter of the CIA-backed Al-Qaeda-linked Salafi extremist opposition in Syria. He actually posed in a photo with a rebel who was involved in kidnapping 11 Lebanese Shia civilians. Absolutely amazing, the legacy that he has got here. And then, of course, he was also famously chanted as he was running for president in 2007. He was running for the 2008 election. He stood up at a rally, and he gave us his impression of a Beach Boy song. Remember this? Let's play that clip.
It's well documented that we have, for quite a long time now, known where the real problem is in the Middle East. And, in fact, the president adequately described it as the axis of evil. I guess my question is, how many times do we have to prove that these people are blowing up people now, never mind if they get a nuclear weapon? When do we send them an airmail message to Tehran?
That old Beach Boys song, Bomberan. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway.
Always there with the war, isn't he? And of course, when we look at what just happened this last week, that was 2007. We're now 11 years later. We're still hearing the same warmongering fears about how we have to attack Iran. Remember, it was Wesley Clark who said, hey, they've got a schedule. They actually called me into the Pentagon years before this happened with John McCain as he was campaigning to be president of the military-industrial complex. And he said, look, they've got a list of countries that they're going to overthrow. And guess who was put in charge of working out that list? Probably none other than John McCain, because nobody did more than he did to run through that list. But there was something interesting that came up last week. We had Iran tweet out a picture of their new fighter jet. And those of you watching this, I want you to take a look at that picture of their quote-unquote new fighter jet that they said that they had developed in country. This was identified by John Dempsey, and you can see that picture. That is a picture on the bottom of a F-5 that Tehran bought back in 1974, 5 years before the Iranian Revolution. That was when we had our CIA puppet, the Shah of Iran, in power. That was when his Savak was arresting people and torturing them as if they were Gina Haspel. They had a reign of terror, a despot that we put in there, and that was the blowback that we got from that was the Iranian Revolution. But, of course, they had that jet, and now the color picture that you see there on top of it is the new one that they developed in country. I don't think they did anything other than put a new coat of paint on it. But the good news about that is that evidently the Iran-Contra affair, where we traded them weapons under Ronald Reagan, we traded spare parts to Iran so they could give us money under the table to support a secret war in Central America, that apparently worked pretty well for them because they can still keep this thing going. Of course, they don't have a picture of it flying. It is sitting on the ground. We don't know if those parts are still working there. But that is, when we look at this, I understand that Iran has Hezbollah and they have terror, a terror project. They're not good guys. But that is part of what happens when you follow the policies that John McCain put out all of his life. That's the kind of blowback that you get. You overthrow a democratically elected government because you don't like the policies they're going to pursue, or because they might even pursue a socialist policy of confiscating oil company assets. Maybe that was what he was going to do. So they put in the Shah of Iran and a reign of terror. And now for the last 30, 40 years, the people have been chanting death to America every single day. That's called blowback. That's called blowback. And they're still pushing the fact that there is a nuclear weapon that is imminent. Here we are 11 years later, still an imminent nuclear weapon. That was what John McCain was pushing right there. That's when he was saying, we've got to bomb, bomb, bomb Iran. There is one group, one company that is very concerned about John McCain's death. And they put out a remembrance of John McCain. And that is Lockheed Martin put out a tribute to John McCain. Senator McCain was an exceptionally courageous leader, a true patriot, dedicated his life and service to our nation, and on and on. While ensuring the taxpayers' interests are properly served, he will be greatly missed. You know, he'll be missed by Lockheed Martin. One person tweeted out, Daniel O'Meara tweeted out, if I'm lovingly memorialized by a massive defense contractor upon my death, you have my permission to spit on my corpse and throw it to a pack of wild dogs. This is worse than NAMBLA sending flowers. And then another one said, I can't read the statement. It's covered in blood. As is his legacy. As Zero Hedge points out, McCain's legacy will chiefly remain as the foremost pro-intervention hawk in recent American history. I would say in all of American history. We didn't have an interventionist American government prior to the end of World War II. And in all of that period of time, he stands out as the worst provocateur, creating chaos, death, and destruction and war everywhere. John McCain, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, as we look at all the eulogies for John McCain, and I look at all of the, what I see as problems, the wars and the chaos and the death in his wake, it's not really just John McCain's war and chaos and death. It is something that we as an American people own. Because it's not just one individual. This is a, as we see everybody lining up to call John McCain an American hero, both Republican and Democrat, left and right. They're doing that not simply because he opposed President Trump, but because he embodied what this country has become. The military-industrial complex that we were warned about by President Eisenhower. The deep state, the permanently entrenched bureaucracy that is serving the globalist agenda of George Soros and others. You can see it in the Ukraine. You can see it in Syria. You can see it in Libya. All the different places that John McCain was so active in pushing this. As much as Hillary Clinton. This is why President Trump getting in was such a threat to them. Because of all the people, Mitt Romney, John McCain, George Bush, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they were all going to push this same agenda. This is why they love him so much. If you look at what he did just a few months ago, one of his final acts 6 months ago, one of his last votes was to vote against an effort 6 months ago to end the Saudi slaughter in Yemen that has resulted in tens of thousands of civilian deaths. And yet you've got people like Chuck Schumer, Beto O'Rourke, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, all of them calling him an American hero, worshiping him, when he supports this kind of slaughter. And he supports it everywhere. Yemen, Syria, Libya, Ukraine, everywhere. You think we've got two parties here? We don't have Republican and Democrat. We have the military-industrial complex. We have one party. It's called the War Party. We just have two wings of the War Party. The War and Welfare State Party. That's what we really have. So, yeah, name the Senate building after John McCain, because he is the embodiment of the empire that we have become. Absolutely disgusting what this country has become. And he is the poster child for it. As Zero Hedge pointed out, even CNN seems to recognize this with the opening line of its obituary that memorialized John McCain. They said, whenever America was in a fight during his long lifetime, John McCain was in the thick of it. And as I said before, if there was a war anywhere that we were not involved in, he wanted to drag us into it. And if there was some place where there was peace, he wanted to start a civil war and overthrow the government there. As they point out in this article in Zero Hedge, I said, U.S. citizens might question whether the guy who's been called the last lion of the Senate, I wish he was the last one. There's plenty of other lions there, and there's plenty of other people lying to us about why we need to go to war in various places. Questioning whether or not this last lion of the Senate has actually made America less safe, it's based on a well-known principle of blowback. And they quote from a 2015 essay by David Stockman titled Blowback, The Washington War Party's Folly Comes Home to Roost. And this is what David Stockman said 3 years ago. The gates of hell have been opened by Washington's senseless destruction of regimes in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Afghanistan, and elsewhere that refused to do its bidding. Yet not one of these backwaters of tyranny and economic and military insignificance posed any threat whatsoever to the safety and security of American citizens in Lincoln, Nebraska, or Manchester, New Hampshire. That, folks, is the legacy of John McCain, the embodiment of the American empire. And it's not a legacy that I'm proud of. You shouldn't be proud of it either. Think about things that John McCain said. Here's Syria. Here's John McCain on Syria. Providing military assistance to the Free Syrian Army and other opposition groups is necessary, but at this late hour, that alone will not be sufficient to stop the slaughter and save innocent lives. The only realistic way to do this is with foreign air power. Saying that after their false flag gas attacks. And we led the opposition to that here at InfoWars, telling people we don't want to become Al-Qaeda's Air Force, because that's exactly who John McCain was allied with, Al-Qaeda. Yeah, they changed the name again. Changed the name to ISIS. Of course, Al-Qaeda wasn't their first name. They used to be called the Mujahideen. Then in Iraq War, number two, John McCain said, America's leaders today have a choice. It will determine whether our people live in fear behind the walls that have already been breached as our enemies plan our defeat in time we had given them to do it. Was that really the case? Was that really necessary for us to go into the Iraq War? Were we going to be, if we didn't get involved in the Iraq War, were we going to be isolationist, hiding behind a wall while we give them time to defeat us? This is the Dr. Strangelove insanity of John McCain. Unbelievable. And as a footnote here, they say in this article from Zero Hedge, they say religious and ethnic minorities throughout Iraq and Syria have widely faulted McCain's U.S. military interventionist policies for bringing their communities to the brink of extinction. Of course it has. If you look at what's going on in the aftermath of the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, Syria had a Christian community. So did Iraq. So did Afghanistan. Completely wiped out after we occupied those areas. But we're number one when it comes to heroin now in Afghanistan. And speaking of Afghanistan, John McCain says, should the Taliban refuse our demand, then they must know that they will be treated as allies of our enemy, thus are themselves our enemies, and will suffer much for their allegiance. Always there, always pushing war. In Libya, John McCain, I would arm, train, equip, both from within and from without, forces that would eventually overthrow the governments and install free and democratically elected governments. Uh-huh. That was in 2000. Yeah, they got their wish. How'd that work out for us? Turned it into an arms bazaar, which they then used to channel arms into Syria for their next conflict. And then, of course, here's a picture of John McCain with a so-called rebel who later emerged as the head of ISIS in Libya. Yeah, there you go. Friend of terrorists, John McCain. That's why I said at the beginning of the program, the deep state and ISIS have suffered a severe setback with the death of John McCain. Going to Kosovo, the best, of course, the best course for us, for NATO, for Kosovo, for Russia, and even Serbia, is to begin fighting this war as if it was a war. Let's escalate Kosovo. Everywhere you look, whether it's even Mali, we need to have Department of Defense assistance as much as feasible and necessary to prevent Mali from deteriorating further, so forth and so on. As if his presence and policies there would keep it from going into chaos. And the Sudan and other places in Africa and so forth. And don't forget that in June of last year, the guy who perpetrated the London Bridge attack, I just showed you the picture of John McCain posing with a so-called rebel who then became, was then acknowledged as the leader of ISIS. When the Muslim terrorists who perpetrated the London Bridge attack fought with that militia, the Free Syrian Army, the same one that John McCain wanted to arm. So, yeah, was he a hero? I don't think so. When you go down and you look at those lists of wars that he begged for, the wars that he began, the wars that he fueled, this was a megalomaniac who was acting even more viciously. There was nothing funny about his performance in his lifetime. He was a Dr. Strangelove. And I've got one more thing to say about John McCain, and that is his hero status in Vietnam. Was John McCain a maverick when it came to POWs? Or did he do everything he could to fight the people who were trying to recover the POWs who were left behind? One more thing to tell you about John McCain. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Thing to say about John McCain. Yeah, as I've said, whether it is political issues of immigration, of Obamacare, of taxes, of budgeting, he has betrayed people on Planned Parenthood funding and everything else. The only thing that I have seen John McCain be consistent on and ethical on is torture. The only thing that he has been consistent and ethical on. Everything else, as I said, he's been a poster child for the empire of death and destruction that America has become. The worst of the military-industrial complex that we were warned about by Eisenhower. And I've got one more thing to say about John McCain and how he treated people who were trying to recover prisoners of war. Because that's been one of the things that the left has lauded him over, the fact that he was a prisoner of war. And I want to talk about how he treated the people who are left behind. But before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a couple of new products as well as a special discount for those of us, those of you listening to this program, a discount of 20% off of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. Just use the code REALNEWS to save 20% off of both the original and the immune support Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. You can get that in either of those flavors, and it is 100% Arabica bean and non-GMO. We also have a couple of new products, a new formulation of the Ultimate Bone Broth at 50% off, and a new product, Ultimate Female Force, that you can get for an introductory price of 50% off. Take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program, and we really do appreciate your support. There's an article on the New American as John McCain passed away. And I'm just going to read you, because it's absolutely amazing when you look at what John McCain did. And quite frankly, before I read this, I was not aware of that. I know that the Tokyo Rose type of recordings that John McCain did came out a year or so ago. And I understand the duress that he was under. And I have sympathy for people that are being tortured. And that's why you can't rely on intelligence that you get from people who are being tortured. They will say anything to get that to stop. Anything. And yet they did rely on that. And John McCain used the product of torture to push the Iraq war. Because he would use anything to push war. So even on that aspect, he compromised on that principle of torture. But as New American points out, an article yesterday, McCain was no maverick when it comes to POWs. Yes, he towed the government line and covered up any efforts to try to recover these people who are left behind. New American writes, the predictable hosannas to Senator McCain, who died Saturday of brain cancer, came surging in like a Category 5 hurricane. The Washington Post published, listen to this, 14 items on its front webpage on Saturday. And the New York Times, 6. They called him a maverick. They called him a hero. As the Washington Post put it, a force of nature in Washington with an unrivaled global stature. Yes, that's right. Why is he loved by all these globalist politicians? Because he was one of them. One would think that McCain's nearly 6 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam would have made him a natural to lead the effort to recover the POWs the Nixon administration left behind. But alas, the maverick towed the government line. They said they had no evidence that there were men that were left behind there. And McCain fought tooth and nail against anyone who attempted to disclose the truth. McCain was quite vicious about it, actually, when he served on the Senate Select Committee on POW and MIA affairs. The evidence the committee gathered showed without doubt that at least 700 men were left behind in Vietnam, but McCain didn't want to hear anything about that. He didn't want to hear the truth. McCain has insisted again and again that all of the evidence, documents, witnesses, satellite photos, two Pentagon chiefs' sworn testimony, aborted rescue missions, ransom offers that were apparently scorned, all of this, says John McCain, had been woven together by unscrupulous deceivers to create an insidious, unpatriotic myth. McCain called it the bizarre rantings of the MIA hobbyists. You hear that? This is a guy who wore the results of him being a prisoner of war as a badge of honor. He used it to carve out a political career for himself, and then he heaped scorn on people who tried to rescue the people who were left behind. Absolutely amazing. He has regularly vilified those who keep trying to pry out classified documents, calling them hoaxers, calling them charlatans, calling them conspiracy theorists, and dime store Rambos. Those are the terms that John McCain used for people who are trying to rescue their loved ones from POW camps, ignoring the sworn testimony of two Pentagon chiefs, all the documentary evidence and photographs, even ransom offers. Oh, you talk about all that kind of stuff. You're a bunch of hoaxers. You're a bunch of dime store Rambos. You're a bunch of conspiracy theorists. McCain browbeat expert witnesses, while family members who pressed him to end the secrecy have also been treated to his legendary temper. He has screamed at them, insulted them, brought women to tears. When POW activist Dolores Alfond of the National Alliance of Families appeared before the committee that John McCain was on to look into POWs and MIAs, and cited ironclad electronic intelligence that showed Americans alive in Vietnam in 1974, McCain, the maverick, showed up to pound her into the ground. Her brother was an Air Force pilot shot down over North Vietnam. Schanberg wrote, McCain attended the committee hearing specifically to confront her because of her criticism of the panel's work. He bellowed and berated her for quite a while, his face turning anger pink. He accused her of denigrating his patriotism. And the bullying had its effect. She began to cry. After a pause, she recovered and tried to respond to his scorching tirade, but McCain simply turned away and stormed out of the room. McClatchy newspapers reported his angry outburst 4 years later after this encounter at the committee here. At that time, they had about 25 members who went to, these are people who were trying to the National Alliance of Families who had POWs that were left behind in Vietnam. So about 25 of them went to the Senate office building. They were hoping to meet John McCain. They stood in the hall, and McCain and an aide walked by. Six people present at that time have written statements describing what they saw. Here's what they saw. McCain waved his hand to shoo away Jeanette Jenkins, whose cousin was last seen in Vietnam in 1970, causing her to hit a wall. As McCain continued walking, Jane Duke Gaylor, the mother of another missing serviceman, approached the senator. Gaylor, in a wheelchair equipped with portable oxygen, stretched out her arms towards McCain. McCain stopped, glared at her, raised his left arm, ready to strike her, composed himself, and pushed the wheelchair away from him, according to the sister of an Air Force captain who's been missing since 1967. This is the testimony reported by McClatchy newspapers. Six people present at this point in time released written statements, affidavits. John McCain was worse than Dr. Strangelove, a warmonger with severe psychological issues for what he suffered. Never saw a war that he didn't want to get involved in. I don't know really what his psychological issues are. We really, really did escape a very dangerous individual in the White House. I shudder to think what this guy would have done if he had been president. Aside from the POW issues, continues a New American, McCain switched positions on issues frequently, telling audience what they wanted to hear. Immigration was one of them, of course. You know, he was part of the Gang of Eight, so forth. Obamacare was another one. Remember the thumbs down. Climate change was another one. Planned Parenthood was another one. This is his legacy. This is a legacy. Remember what I just read to you. The way that he treated the families of fellow POWs after the war. Of course, there's a lot of people who had questions and said things about what he did as a prisoner of war. But this is what he did as a senator. Shutting down any investigation, trying to rescue people who had been left behind. Remember that. As you see these people lauding him as a hero, criticizing President Trump because he refuses to do so. Yes, offer his family condolences, but don't call him a hero. Don't call him a hero. If he is a hero, I shudder to think what that says about our country, about what it says about our war party with the two wings called Democrats and Republicans. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I'm finished with John McCain, so let's move on to another sacred cow, the Pope. I might as well get everybody angry at me today. We've got a former Vatican official claims that Pope Francis knew of abusive ex-cardinal. This would be Cardinal McCarrick, the guy who was the money man for the U.S. Catholic Church here. Again, getting a papal indulgence. You pay him enough money, and you can do whatever you want to the little boys and to the other clergy that are under you. No pun intended. A former Vatican ambassador to the U.S. said Sunday that he told Pope Francis in 2013 about allegations of sexual abuse against a prominent priest, that Francis took no action, and now he is calling for Pope Francis to step down. Archbishop Vigano made the claims in a lengthy statement. This is an 11-page written statement that he's making these claims in. It concludes with a call for Francis's resignation. He says, in this extremely dramatic moment for the Universal Church, he, that is Pope Francis, must acknowledge his mistakes, and in keeping with the proclaimed principle of zero tolerance, Pope Francis must be the first to set a good example to cardinals and bishops who covered up McCarrick's abuses and resign, along with all of them. That's what it really takes. This institution, like every other, is going to rot from the head down. And they have done everything they can to throw children and others under the bus so they could preserve this institution. And now they need to leave. Pagano, who retired in 2016 at the age of 75, described what happened June 23rd in 2013. He had an exchange with Pope Francis shortly after Francis became Pope. And this exchange involved Cardinal McCarrick, the former Archbishop of Washington, D.C., who resigned last month over claims that he sexually abused seminary students and an altar boy. Pagano writes that he told Francis, "I don't know if you know Cardinal McCarrick, but if you ask the Congregation for Bishops, there is a dossier this thick about him. He corrupted generations of seminarians and priests, and Pope Benedict ordered him to withdraw to a life of prayer and penance." Well, Pope Benedict should have turned him over to the police. Anyway, can you imagine? He says, it's an open secret. He's got a thick dossier. All these people know about it. He has corrupted a generation of seminarians, priests, and nothing has been done about it. He said the Pope didn't respond to a statement. He said Pope Francis has repeatedly asked for total transparency in the church. He must honestly state when he first learned about the crimes committed by McCarrick. And yet, in response, what we see is Pope Francis says, "I won't say a word about it." That's it. Won't say a word about it. He had a lot to say when he went to Chile. He went down there to try to patch things up with the public. And instead, what he did was he wound up saying that people who were criticizing the bishops who had covered up for this pedophile who was exposed said, "You're guilty of calumny, of slander." In other words, he started attacking the victims, the Pope did, when he went down to Chile. Now, the Chilean government is actually raiding Catholic churches, church offices, to get documents because they're going to get involved in prosecutions. Australia has done the right thing. Australia has removed the statute of limitations for pedophilia because they understand this is a crime that it takes the victims quite a while to come to terms with. That is why the guy who is in charge of the Vatican Bank, Archbishop Pell, is down there to answer charges in Australia. But you see a disturbing pattern here? The people who are providing the big money to the Catholic Church, the people who are at the top, the people who are buddies with the Pope, get a free pass. And as one individual who is in Ireland, a survivor of abuse, his last name is O'Gorman, he says, "It's staggering to me that in 2018 we're still asking a Pope to take responsibility, not for his own actions necessarily, but for the actions of the institution that he leads. It is mind-boggling to me that to ask the Pope to tell the damn truth is a radical thing to suggest. The Vatican has directed, implemented, and instituted a cover of the crimes of clergy, including rape and abuse of women and children. What does it take?" Good question. What does it take? We'll be right back.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. As I was just talking about the call by an archbishop for the Pope to resign, he said, "I told him back in 2013, 5 years ago, I told him about McCarrick. I told him he had a file this thick. He didn't do anything." He wrote 11 pages talking about that, talking about how everybody from the Pope on down had covered this up. And as I pointed out many times in the very first interview that the Pope gave with a left-wing writer, a guy who has always been a critic of the Catholic Church, but interestingly enough, he gets along just great with Pope Francis. They're buddies. And he's given him one interview after the other, all of them resulting in very controversial articles. Articles saying that the Pope doesn't believe this, doesn't believe that. Or the very first one was he asked him about the pedophile scandal. And he said, "The Pope told me he thinks it's only 2% of the people, not a big problem." And I said, when that came out, I said, "Can you believe this? 2% of the people? Look at the number of priests that they have. Look at the number of clergy. That's over 8,000 people. If it's 2%, that's over 8,000 pedophiles." And there we were several years later, we're following the Pope around as he went from Washington, where McCarrick was, up to New York, talked to the UN because he's a globalist, and then he goes to Pennsylvania at the center of what we have just seen exposed, having the national or international global family day. Where would he have that? Well, he would have that at the center of the worst pedophile abuse that has been documented in the United States. That's where he goes to have the family conference. And now he's in Ireland. And if you look at those crowds, they are as empty as the church pews. But the Catholic hierarchy is not repentant, and it doesn't seem to be remorseful throughout any of this. The Pope said he's not going to respond to this. He's not going to do anything about that. We got a Mexican cardinal saying victims who accuse priests should be ashamed of themselves. Ashamed of themselves. This is a newly minted cardinal speaking to a group of journalists back in October, on August the 16th, just days after what we learned about in Pennsylvania. He said, sometimes those who accuse men of the church should be careful because they have long tails that are easily stepped on. Seriously? Says the guy who has cloven hooves and horns. I mean, seriously, long tails that can be stepped on. That's the way that he puts it. Those who accuse us should have a little pain. Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. So that's the response of the cardinal in Mexico, after we have these other cardinals who have been let off. And I think one of the saddest things about this, when we look at what's going on in Ireland, we look at the fact that the teachings of the Catholic Church used to be a force of moral restraint. It was one of the reasons that they had abortion constitutionally prohibited. That's just now been overturned. Why? Because the people have seen the hypocrisy of the Catholic Church. And they're now turning away. Unfortunately, they put all this stuff into the same group. They've turned away from Christ. They've turned away from ethics because they confuse those with these politicians and bankers that are wearing these robes. That is what's really sad about it. We see Oprah Winfrey getting into politics more, as Life News pointed out last week in the July issue of her O magazine. She's saying, shout your abortion. She featured that. That's a woman, Amelia Bonow, who founded that movement, Shout Your Abortion. Bonow began the campaign to urge women to brag about aborting their unborn babies. So this is where we are now. People are looking at this and saying, well, you know, the Catholic Church told me that it's wrong to kill a baby. And look at what they're doing, abusing these children. So I'm fed up with this hypocrisy. Let's just let everybody do whatever they want, and we'll sort it out later. And now we've gotten to the point where they not only allow it, but now they want people to brag about it. So Bonow told Oprah Winfrey's magazine that was featuring her, she said, in 2015, when I found out the House of Representatives had voted to defund Planned Parenthood, I kind of unraveled. So I opened up Facebook, and without thinking, I wrote, like a year ago, I had an abortion at Planned Parenthood, and I remember this experience with nearly inexpressible level of gratitude. I hit post 153 words later, and everything changed. She said the campaign really took off when a friend shared her post on Twitter with the hashtag shout your abortion. So now they're owning it. And so I would say, if they are so proud of their abortions, and they're so proud of what they are doing, why do we still have the gag order on the Center for Medical Progress and what they exposed? I mean, you know, these people with Planned Parenthood weren't shouting about it. But they were openly talking about it at dinner meetings as to how they could procure the body parts that the people claimed that they wanted to buy from them. And yet there is still a gag order on what is really happening there. Center for Medical Progress has filed a motion to lift a gag order currently preventing them from releasing new and damning undercover videos of Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry. You hear that? We haven't seen all of the criminal conspiracies that these people were involved in. We've had California put a gag order on it. Well, you know, you're proud of your abortion? Shout your abortion. Shout your body parts industry. Shout it out. You're so proud of it. You know, I look at all of this stuff, and I look at the Me Too movement that is out there. You now got, as we had last week come out, Asia Argento, who was leading that. Turns out that she was on the other side of this as well. And yet, what happens to you and I at the low level, right? We're not people who are politically connected. We're not bigwigs in Hollywood. We don't have a lot of money. Look at what happens to a woman in Chicago. A Willamette, Chicago mom, or Illinois mom, was investigated for letting her 8-year-old walk the dog around the block. So while these big politicians and big church people get away with raping children, if you're a mom who lets your child, your girl, walk the dog around the block, you get CPS called on you. An anonymous caller contacted the police after seeing the girl walking the dog alone. While the police never pursued the charges, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, CPS, started snooping around, and they launched an investigation. And the mother said, for something like this to happen to me, there's something really wrong. You see, when we have a government that intrudes itself into our lives like this, you know, the big people go through. One person compared it to the spider web, where the big bumblebees just fly right through the spider web. It's there for the little flies and little gnats. Those are the ones who get caught in these spider webs that we create. The big guys go right through this. This woman said, 48, she agreed to let her 8-year-old daughter and her 17-year-old son get a Maltese puppy last year, as long as everybody took turns walking the dog. The girls walk around the block, most of which the mother said she can see from out of her windows, is the only time that her homeschooled daughter is unsupervised. She said, the funny thing is, I'm a joke with my friends because my kids are around me all of the time. But we can't have kids who play outside anymore. They can't walk around the block within sight of their mother without having CPS trying to kidnap their kids. Wyden's story is not unique. Mothers in the Chicago area and around the country have found themselves at the center of investigations by police or child welfare officials, report Chicago Tribune, after their children were spotted alone but unharmed playing in parks. You know, or you talk about the young black kid who was playing in a park, pew-pew, with a gun, and somebody called the police because he had a toy gun. And you've seen the video footage. Tamir Rice, and they show up, jump out of the car, instantly shoot the child dead. That's even worse than calling CPS. Get swatted by some snitchy neighborhood, because this is what we have turned into. We have turned into a country of snitches, who, because we have been so frightened by warmongers like John McCain, we have turned on each other, even worse than the people in East Germany. Stay with us. We're going to be right back with Timothy Alberino. And we're going to talk about transhumanism, artificial intelligence, and the threats presented by those things. We'll be right back. The superdelegates? Remember how we had the primaries? We were talking about the returns, and I remember this over and over again. We talk about the results of the primaries and say, well, you know, Bernie Sanders got this many votes and Hillary Clinton got that many votes, and, you know, they're roughly even, but Hillary's going to get almost all the delegates. Or, even worse, he beats her and she gets quite a bit more delegates out of that. That was all the superdelegate situation. And, of course, she had those superdelegates, the insiders in the party. That was all sewn up before the first vote was cast. That was the reason that people in the Democrat Party were so upset with Hillary Clinton. That was the reason that a whistleblower handed a thumb drive to a former British ambassador who admitted that he went to America. He said, I went to America to have this information about Hillary Clinton handed to me. This information about the DNC handed to me by a whistleblower inside. And subsequent to that, we have had William Binney, former NSA technical head for decades, and other intelligence veterans, look at the amount of time that it took for the files to transfer and the size and say it's absolutely not possible that this information was hacked. It had to have been copied in that amount of time. It had to have been transferred and copied via a thumb drive. It could not have been hacked as they say that it was hacked. And again, add to that the fact that we had the CrowdStrike, the contractors for the DNC, telling the FBI they were not going to be allowed to examine the servers themselves. So you put all of that together, and all of that was the basis for this Russians hacked us, because they didn't want people to see the information that had come out about the corrupt DNC, about Hillary Clinton, so they created a red herring, Russiagate. Oh, look at that over there. Don't look at this. Look at that over there. It's the Russians. It's right. Pay no attention to those emails over here. And we have been dancing around this for quite some time now. The DNC has not been able to raise any money. It's widely reported last week that even though you have donations to individual candidates up quite a bit in this off-year election, with the Democrats energized and their opposition to President Trump, the contributions have risen significantly to Democrat candidates individually, but nobody is giving any money to the DNC. Everybody hates the DNC. So what has the DNC now done? Bernie Sanders is now praising the DNC as they try to do a CYA and say, we're not going to have the superdelegate thing anymore. We're not going to have them pick the nominee. They'll be able to vote, but not on the first ballot of the nominating process. They will be there in case there is a situation where it is, tie or it's not conclusive. Then we will have the superdelegates get involved in the second round. This is simply a whitewashing to try to get people to contribute to this corrupt organization that was bankrupt by the millions when Hillary Clinton bought them out, literally bought them out, along with the superdelegates who had been her allies because of political connections for many, many years. And I find this to be very interesting. We'll have to see if they really have cleaned up their act. But of course, folks, when we're talking about hacking the election, they didn't want people to see what had happened with the DNC. They didn't want people to see Podesta's emails. So they invented this Russian hacking thing. At the same time, telling everybody, oh, no, no votes were changed. They didn't get into any computers. Don't worry about that. That's all secure. Oh, really? We've had the NSA hacked. We've had the CIA hacked. We've had the Pentagon hacked. And we have seen, just to drive the point home, because every time there's an election, as I've said before, you'll have some associate professor at a junior college come in with his undergraduate students. In other words, these are not people who are some kind of computer whizzes. They know their way around a computer, but they are not cybersecurity experts by any means. They just come in with a thumb drive and with physical access to the machine, they can hack the election and then for a particular voting machine and then erase all traces of that. And people will say, oh, but that is if they have physical access to the machine. It's even worse if you connect it to the internet to report these vote totals. And that was demonstrated in Las Vegas at the beginning of the month, DEF CON, where they have the hacking conference, as well as Black Hat, which follows it. They organized children. I think they were like from 5 to 17 years old. It was an 11-year-old who hacked a replica of the state boards of election the quickest and was able to change vote totals there at the state boards of election website where everything is totaled up. So you have to keep custody not only of the votes at the site, you have to have validated voters, which the Democrat Party is working very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Anybody can register as a voter in these Democrat districts, but you have to know that you have valid voters. You have to keep track of, you have to watch to make sure the ballot, of course, isn't stuffed or the voting machine isn't stuffed. You have to follow the custody of all of those votes as they work their way through the reporting process. So it can be hacked. As this becomes electronic, it can be hacked at any point of this. It's just been underscored over the weekend. 75% of Texas voters exposed after an unsecured database was discovered. So you don't think they can literally hack the election? Come on. 14.8 million Texas voters were discovered by a New Zealand-based data breach hunter who goes by the pseudonym Flash Gordon. The 16-gigabyte file contained dozens of fields, including personal information like voter names, addresses, gender, race, and so forth. A lot of this stuff you can buy, but things like the Social Security number, those things cannot be bought. So this is something altogether different. And as Ann Coulter said, I want to play a clip from Ann Coulter, because this whole absurd idea that there were a dirty dozen Russian individuals who somehow hacked the election by spending only, I think, $100,000, according to Facebook, and they were pressured to come up with that number. They come back and say, oh, yeah, we think they spent $100,000 compared to Hillary Clinton spending over $1 billion. That somehow threw the election. I think it's now maybe the dirty dozen is up to 13. Here's what Ann Coulter had to say about this.
This is, you know, these trained spy masters. Their idea for flipping an election to Trump is, we'll take out these 13 Russians, we'll put up Facebook ads, and yes, that will sway, that will have, we'll be putting our finger on this election more than the entire media in the United States.
Yes.
No match for 13 Russians and their Pizzagate conspiracy on Facebook. But you look at the language they use, and it's really kind of hilarious. The dark Facebook ads, the darkest espionage, turning one American against another. If they're turning one American against another, I think Mueller's the Russian spy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Mueller investigation was not about investigating a hacking of the 2016 election. This is about setting up the hacking of the 2018 election. Lanny Davis has just admitted that he lied to the Washington Post and to CNN. So Washington Post and CNN. CNN reported in July that Cohen claimed to have witnessed Trump approving a meeting between Trump Jr. and Russian attorney Natalia Veselnitskaya. A day after CNN's report, the Washington Post, using an anonymous source that Lanny Davis has now said, it was me, it was me, yeah, connected at the hip with the Clintons for decades. Now, Michael Cohen's lawyer, but now he is walking back this stuff. Isn't this interesting? All right, stay with us. We're going to be right back talking to Timothy Alberino.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Timothy Alberino. He's going to be speaking at the Gen 6 conference that is coming up September the 14th in Branson, Missouri. I'll be speaking there as well. We'll be talking about transhumanism, the hybrid age, and post-humanism. There are technologies, and again, when we talk about technologies, as I said many times, I'm an engineer. I love technology. I love technology that empowers individuals. But we have to be very concerned about technology that empowers the few at the expense of everybody else. And we have some new technologies that are coming online: genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology. All of these technologies have massive capability to transform our society in a very disruptive way. Now, that could be good or it could be bad. I mean, as we look at the consequences of this, is it going to be another industrial revolution that is going to leave you unemployed and unemployable, homeless, at the mercy of a few people like Jeff Bezos? Is it going to be something that is not just disruptive, but is it going to be destructive? Is it going to run away, get out of control, like an out-of-control nuclear reactor? Are we going to have out-of-control genetic modification? We're constantly told this new editor that they've got, well, it's not actually new, they've had it now for a while, CRISPR-Cas9, we're told, it's a scalpel, we can go in and we can stitch these things together, different types of animals, or we can stitch together plants and animals and create things, life forms that nobody's ever seen, augment them in different ways. Is that going to be something that is going to create self-propagating problems that we have never seen before? Is it going to destroy humanity as we know it? You know, there's some people out there who are hoping that that's going to happen. So we have to be aware as to what is on the horizon. That's what this conference is about. You can find out about it at Gen 6. That's G-E-N-S-I-X, as in Genesis 6, gen6.com. And you can use the code Alex to save 10% on the live stream. I think they're just about sold out in the theater there. It's in the Mansion Theater in Branson, Missouri. It's got about 3,000 people. I think the live conference is nearly sold out. Timothy can give us an update on that. But you can still live stream the conference so you can get a discount of 10% with the code Alex. You can also find Tim at his website, timothyalbarino.com. So joining us now is Timothy Albarino. Welcome, Timothy.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me on.
You know, it's kind of interesting. We look at all these different reports that come out. We had a lot of news last week that was put up by Drudge about killer robots. I've interviewed Professor Sharkey and others. Most of the concern about killer robots seems to be coming from Europe. There doesn't seem to be a lot of concern about it here in the United States. But as we look at all this technology, it's not just a two-edged sword. Like I talk about, it can be used for good, it can be used for bad purposes, or it can just be really ugly and stupid, you know, when something is out of control. And that's what I think a lot of people are concerned about with killer robots. That's just one of the ways that one of these technologies can get out of control, isn't it?
It is. My concern with killer robots is more China than anywhere else. China is developing this stuff at a pace that we simply can't keep up with. China doesn't have the same kind of regulations as we have over here in the United States, same kind of ethical regulations that we have. So when you unbridle a country, a communist, which is essentially still a socialist/communist country, China, you unbridle them from any kind of ethical constraints. And there's nothing that they're not going to try. There's nothing they're not going to attempt as it relates to robotics, genetics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology. Their goal is to overcome the United States, certainly in the military aspect with their technologies that they're going to be fielding in the future on the battlefield. And so yeah. The super soldiers, there's a quiet arms race happening right now. It's a super soldiers arms race, which is genetically modifying soldiers for the battlefield. But aside from the super soldiers arms race, we also have a robotics arms race, which is happening just as fiercely behind the scenes. And the future war is going to look vastly different than certainly the last wars we fought in Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam.
And that's the thing that really concerns me, is because all of this research that has this capability of transforming our society is essentially being funded by DARPA, the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects. It's being funded by DARPA. It's being funded by the CIA and other people like that who, since the middle of the 20th century, have been working on ways to hack people's minds. They were trying to do it psychologically. They were trying to do it with drugs and so forth. And now they have hundreds of billions of dollars that they're pouring into this. But it's going to be used in a military way. They like to tell us, oh, look, we want to help soldiers who are suffering from PTSD. We want to be able to remove those painful memories and implant nice memories or so forth. But they're really looking at ways that they can wirelessly communicate with these super soldiers that are going to be augmented humans, or the ways that they can genetically modify them. And when we look at the robotics side of this and the hardware side of this, we've seen everything from Russia having a bulletproof soldier suit, which really looks more like it'd be used for law enforcement. It's kind of like a RoboCop, except it's not remote control. You'd actually have people inside of it, kind of like Pacific Rim type of thing, but on a reasonable scale. So you have that type of thing. Then you have the fully autonomous killer robots, which would give them plausible deniability in case this thing goes on a massive killing spree. But then somewhere in the middle of those, you have remotely controlled robots that people can control, kind of like we saw in Avatar, where you had somebody, enter a suit and remotely control this disposable thing. So it gives them a force magnitude, which is very concerning, because now you have more and more force being concentrated in the hands of a few people, as opposed to having to rely on soldiers who have a conscience, who have ethics. They can use these robot soldiers to do whatever they wish.
That's true. And there are broad implications here, because everybody's familiar with the idea that there's a new world order formulating behind the scenes, that the elites want to create a one world government, a one world control system that overrides the sovereignty of nations. And if you can have a robotic army, if you can have an army of genetically modified super soldiers, and you can field the drone technology and robots, then you don't even need the compliance of the military of other nations. You can create your own military. And this is something that's coalescing behind the scenes. And a lot of people are distracted with other issues, sociopolitical issues. But what people need to understand is that the technologies, the most profound technologies in human society, are often first developed for military application.
That's
and
right.
After they've reached a certain level of development in military application, they trickle down into society and they emerge in the commercial market. That's the next phase of all of this. These technologies that are being developed for the augmentation of the human species, because that's what it is, are soon going to be trickling down into a commercial market of inestimable value, which has yet to emerge. And when that commercial market emerges, we are going to see the whole-scale alteration, the whole-scale modification of the human species going forward into an unprecedented future, the hybrid age.
That's right. We're talking about the electronic aspects of this. You know, talking about the autonomous killing machines, robots that give them leverage. And, of course, Hugo de Garis is going to be speaking at the Gen 6 conference. I've interviewed him many times. He talks about artificial intelligence and the self-aware scenario, which I'm not as worried about. The scenario that I was concerned about, that was the title of his book, The Art-like War, he looks at a situation where you have the technological elite, a few billionaires who have a lot of leverage, and consider the fact that all of these robotics companies that were promising have been bought by Google. And so if you've got a Google or you've got a Bezos or somebody that, you can have these billionaires like a James Bond villain with their own private armies, and that's exactly what he had considered, what he called the Artelec War, going back more than a decade, saying if we try to stop these people who want to move ahead with these technologies, if we feel that they're too dangerous, they will withdraw to one area of the Earth or into a near-Earth orbit, like we saw depicted in the movie Elysium. And they have the technological capability to unleash these robotic armies on us. And, of course, their ultimate desire is to alter the essence of mankind. And we will talk about that with Timothy Alberino when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Timothy Alberino. The question is, are we at the cusp of a massive transformation in humanity? We got a lot of people who for a long time have been hoping that they can move beyond humanity, that they can leave these human bodies behind. Of course, this is something that is built into the human psyche. We see it going back to Genesis 1. You know, you'll be like God and you will live forever. That was the promise. We're told that God has set eternity in men's hearts, and yet we don't understand what his plans are. But men are making their own plans. We've had a lot of these science fiction authors have been talking about transhumanism for a very long time. Julian Huxley coined that specific term, but the idea has been around, as I said, since Genesis 1. They want to live forever. They want to create godlike intelligences. They want to become gods themselves. It's a very seductive idea. They have some new technologies that even if they are not able to achieve that, they could radically alter or destroy our society as well as humanity itself. We have a conference that's coming up September the 14th. It's the Gen 6 conference, as in Genesis 6, GENSIX.com. And Timothy Alberino is my guest. He's going to be speaking there. I'll be speaking there. Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, Hugo de Garis, that we just referenced, who wrote The Artelec War. He also was an expert in artificial intelligence, worked in China. As a matter of fact, I've interviewed him many times. If you want to sign up for that conference, you can save 10% off of the live stream. Just use the code ALEX, A-L-E-X, to save 10% for the Gen 6 conference on posthumanism, the hybrid age. And Tim, as we look at this, the thing that gets everybody's attention, of course, is the Terminator scenario. You know, Skynet becoming self-aware, killer robots running the streets and so forth. And we've seen the promise of technology many times not produce. When I was a kid, I kept hearing nuclear power is so clean, it's going to be safe, it's going to be so cheap, it won't even be metered. And yet, in just the last couple of weeks, we saw yet another nuclear power plant, the one at San Onofre, California. It's got a capability, it's got several canisters, it's got 3.6 million pounds of lethal radioactive waste. Each one of these 100-ton canisters has the capacity to release as much radiation as Chernobyl. So we can have these kind of accidents, or it can be done deliberately. Or it can just, you know, as we've talked about, the people who desire to change humanity. The thing that concerns me more than robotics or artificial intelligence, however, is genetics, because that has the capability to unalterably change humanity, doesn't it, Tim?
It absolutely does. And, you know, what we're seeing here is the culmination of several technologies that are going to result in what Friedrich Nietzsche called the Overman. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an important point that a lot of people have overlooked. A lot of technologists and futurists have overlooked. They don't understand where the theology, if you will, of this movement comes from. It comes from Friedrich Nietzsche. And the desire to create an overman, the desire for the human species, the will to power, the evolutionary will to power that Nietzsche talks about, to create overman. And here's what people need to understand about Nietzsche's overman philosophy. Overman is lawless. Overman creates his own system of morality. He's immoral. This is what Nietzsche referred to as the master morality. And this is what we're seeing develop right now. So we have the philosophy of posthumanism that we're witnessing unfold in popular culture. For example, Google, which we now know is extremely a very fascist organization, even though they claim to be against fascism, they're techno-fascists. And oh, yeah. Google used to have
the
motto.
We're talking about fascism. That's really the merger of state and corporations, and that's what we have really seen with Google as they've shut
exactly.
us down on YouTube. I got suspended right in the middle of a live broadcast. Never had a single warning. Never had a single strike against me. They just shut it down, and here I am over 2,000 messages later. I keep getting the same message. A complaint, and we have terminated your channel. I can't get them to respond to the appeal. I can't get the humans on Twitter. I can't shame them into giving me a response. I can't get anything from them because they are the Ubermensch, right?
The same thing happened to me. And so Google used to have a corporate code of conduct, a motto, don't be evil. Well, what we're seeing is Google, these technology corporations are redefining morality. They are determining what is moral and what is immoral. And it's really scary because who are they to define what is hate speech, for example? Yeah. This comes from Nietzsche. This is the master morality of the overman. And this is where everything is moving. This is where everything, the direction in which everything is progressing. It is to create overman in the earth. And that's exactly what these technologists are attempting to do. They want to become overman and create their own form of master morality and determine for the rest of us what is right and wrong, what we can say, what we can think. They're already implementing this. This is the philosophy that's undergirding the technology. And when you mix all of this together,
you're talking about China, Tim, in the last segment. And of course, they're working very closely with the Chinese dictator to do whatever they want. They've got their system of biometric surveillance. They've got their censorship that they're implementing at the behest of President Xi, even shutting down, you know, Winnie the Pooh because that embarrassed him and so forth. But they are also, it's not just cyberspace that they are in control of. You got Alphabet setting up Sidewalk Labs in Toronto where they are working out how they are going to control and dominate the smart cities that the United Nations has posited for. So they're not only just going to control cyberspace. The same company wants to control physical space, urban space. I mean, what are we going to do when they kick you and I out of our apartment and out of our job like they have kicked us off of YouTube without any explanation?
Exactly. And they're going to be the ones determining, as I said, what is moral. It's redefining the moral landscape. And you and I, David, are going to be seen as very immoral people because we don't conform to their master morality, the master morality of the Ubermensch, the overlords. And look at who Google and Apple and Facebook, look who they get in bed with, China, exactly as you said.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the sociopolitical fit for the most natural fit for Google, for Facebook, for Apple is the communist mentality. And that's why they work so well with the communists. People need to wake up. These are techno-fascists.
Yeah, you know, there was a series that was on WND last week, and I talked to Joseph Fair last week, and he was talking about a book that George Gilder had written called Life After Google. And one of the things that he pointed out with us was that their model, not just Google, but all these people that we were just talking about, you know, the Facebook and Apple and all these people, they have a centralized top-down structure that they where they want to control everything. And they want to merge with the government. And, of course, China is the perfect place for them to do that. They can try all this stuff there. But we need to understand that they are still doing it already. In America, they're doing it openly in places like Toronto, where they've got their own test beds going. They're working on their self-driving cars on the road, even though they have safety issues. They are experimenting without our knowledge and consent in many cases, putting these things out there on the roads with us because they want to take over the roads. They want to control and centralize everything. And George Gilder says that he believes that's going to be their ultimate undoing, that we're going, people want security, they want privacy, and those are things that can sell. And the way we're going to get that is to have things that are distributed. But that might be the thing that undoes them, the idea they want central control. It undid the communists, but they are the natural allies of the communists because they want that kind of centralized control.
They're testing all of these ideas in China with this communist regime. And they're going to perfect it in China, and then they're going to try and implement it in the United States. And unfortunately, there's a lot of the older generation is still very much pro-liberty, but the younger generation, they don't care about liberty anymore. They're perfectly happy to have every aspect of their private life on Facebook.
Yeah.
This is a different paradigm. I mean, it's really scary when you think about it, David, because if we lose our admiration, our desire for liberty, then we will be open to any kind of tyranny that comes down the pipe.
That's right. That's right. And I think, and I've said this before, I think they were deliberately programmed to this. The very first one of these reality shows that came out of the UK was called Big Brother. And they could see ordinary people going in there and, you know, they exposing every aspect of their life. And they became celebrities. And then they were offered Facebook, which was essentially a spinoff of DARPA's LifeLog project. And they bit on that. Hey, I could be a celebrity if I put all of my life online. That's what's really dangerous about that. All right, thank you for joining us. And you can find Timothy Albrino at timothyalbrino.com. You can also sign up and save 10% on the conference that's coming up September the 14th. Go to gen6.com. Use the code ALEX, A-L-E-X.